My goodness, the dollop was good.
I love the dollop.
Oh, my.
Love you guys. They're not too fast on Errol Flynn anymore. Well, yeah. Well, we knew he was a bit of a, shall we say, I was going to say ladies' man, but he's a person's man.
Yeah, a cad.
A cad, yeah.
A cad.
A shyster.
A bounder.
A bounder.
A no good nick.
I just had thoughts of him running across the hills. Hello! Bounding.
I'm trying to use old-timey language and obviously failing.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Cad, a shyster. A con man.
Mmm.
Yes.
Perhaps.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. It was a great show.
Perhaps he was even a Melcher.
Melcher.
Never would have happened. Anyway.
That was a masher.
A masher.
That was a masher. The mashers were the guys that went around being naughty and being horrible to women. So they had to stump them with a hat pin so they could actually... get out of that situation. Go see the Hatpin Warriors episode.
Subtle plug. I think we should probably get on with this episode.
Yes, which we could have put out after Halloween, but here at What the History, we'd like to do things a bit before time.
Indeed we do. So we'll be right back to tell you all about it after our little intro. Woo! What the... Hello and welcome to What the Halloween, Phase 2.
Mark 2. Mark 2 sounds better than Phase 2. I have a phaser.
I will mark you for it.
Mark me, James.
Okay, we're getting
off track. I watch Outlander.
Already. So yes, I am Trevor Holland.
And I'm Susie Holland. Hi!
And since Halloween's coming up in about a week's time, we thought it was time for a bit of a spookier, nastier, creepier, grislier What the History. And as such, if you normally listen to this with younger children, we do want to put a bit of a warning up.
That's right. We do
discuss stuff that's maybe not quite as child appropriate as our normal stuff. So I will put timestamps in the podcast description down below so you'll know which bits to skip, and we'll try to give you a heads up during the podcast itself, letting you know ahead of time.
Absolutely, because we value all our listeners.
Absolutely.
Old and young.
We don't want anyone...
In between.
We don't want anyone getting upset or traumatized like I did last year with mine.
I still regret
going into that much detail.
Yep. More about that later on my podcast.
So, what creepy Halloween-y story do you have for us, Susie?
Okay, yep, I've got an interesting one. I will put the trigger warnings in now. There is sexual violence, physical violence, torture, murder of women, and imprisonment. Sorry, guys. I wanted to put that out there. And on that note, usually I research strange events in history that provide amusement, of course, and make people say, what the history, or what the anything, and shake their heads with utter disbelief like I do. But sometimes I research people and events surrounding them, and it's good to research both sides of the story of their lives. And be objective as a researcher should be. And such is the case of my chosen subject for our Halloween episode, and our awesome listeners should make up their own minds about how this person is perceived. Or you can be a little bit unsure like me. Okay, now some called her a cold-blooded serial killer who tortured and murdered her victims. Others have said that she's innocent and a woman surrounded by men who made up stories to obtain her considerable possessions. The woman I am talking about, of course, is Arcady Bathory Elizabeth, known in English as Countess Elizabeth Bathory. Her name conjures up images of a woman that bathed in blood of her victims and was apparently one of the inspiration in Bram Stoker's Dracula, published in 1897. She's also seen as a character in video games, TV shows, movies, and there are also several operas, which I found a bit strange, with her as the main character. mostly Hungarian operas and even a rock opera or two. Mm. Yeah. Like Jesus Christ Superstar, something like that. That would be very interesting. So, Elizabeth the subject is a money spinner, but can it be that she's innocent? Let's find out, and I say again to make up your own minds and do further research. I know that history is often written by people who won the war, so to speak, and can be embellished, but I just want to present the facts. What's not in dispute is that Elizabeth was born into a very wealthy family on the 7th of August 1560 in, oh my goodness, I can't even pronounce it, I'm sorry, but it was in Hungary, I should say, and had the best education and upbringing. She was also said to be a tomboy and suffered from epilepsy and fits of rage. What kid doesn't, really? Elizabeth was a Bathory on both sides of her family, as the branches of her family tree were joined with the marriage of her parents, George and Anna. Now that's their English versions of their names. With Elizabeth becoming engaged at the age of 11 or 12, as per the aristocracy at the time, to her future husband, Fenric Nazdardi, and I probably pronounced that wrong, I'm really sorry, and his wedding present when they married when Elizabeth was 15 was his ancestral home, Kazelci Castle, in what is now Slovakia. Elizabeth outranked her husband in status, so she kept her last name. There was also a rumour that before their marriage, Elizabeth had a child out of wedlock to a lower-ranked guy, and their daughter was raised by a servant of Elizabeth's household. This particular source goes on to say that Fenric had the guy castrated and torn to pieces by dogs. But this is also a source that has Elizabeth as a murderess, but I digress. I should have put in there as well male violence and basically violence to everyone.
I think at the time we said, oh dear, this has got nasty stuff in it. So.
I'm sorry, guys. I'm really sorry. But I think this story needs to be told. Now, 3 years into the marriage, Fenric was promoted to chief commander of the Hungarian troops and went to war against the Ottoman Empire, leaving Elizabeth to run the castle and surrounds. Some sources say that Fenric joined her in her alleged bloodlust, even building her a torture chamber in the dungeons of the castle for her pleasure, and was able to curtail his wife's abuses of girls to an extent. But when Fenric died in 1604 at the age of 48, Elizabeth allegedly started torturing and killing without abandonment. If you want to find out exactly what Elizabeth allegedly did, please look it up. I know this is a Halloween episode, but we hear what the history are mindful that we may have young listeners out there. And besides, I'm still traumatized by Trev's Halloween podcast from last year.
Sorry, thanks. My bad.
Yeah, no. Okay, now the story goes on that when Elizabeth was finished with the girls in the castle doing what she allegedly did, off her henchmen went to find other girls in nearby villages, promising them good work with a very rich and generous Elizabeth. And those girls were never heard of again. And when there were no more girls, Elizabeth turned her attention to higher-born girls, promising them teachings in courtly ways and education. And those girls were allegedly never heard of again either. Now, rumours were being heard about Elizabeth all over the kingdom, but it wasn't until 1610, 6 years after Fenric died, so that's 6 years of these stories going around, that the Holy Roman Emperor Matthias II, King of Hungary and Croatia, who'd heard rumours that things weren't all good at Elizabeth's castle, sent someone to investigate. Finally, people said. That someone was Gogorgi, and that's George in English, Thurzo, who, ironically, Fenric entrusted with the care of Elizabeth and the estate when he lay dying. So Thurzo hired two notaries to look into the alleged crimes of Elizabeth in March 1610, and they came up with a recorded 13 people, alleged 300 witnesses against Elizabeth. In December, Elizabeth was formally arrested for her alleged crimes. Here Thurzo was in a bit of a conundrum. Should he put Elizabeth and her cohorts on trial and execution and risk destroying the good name of a noble and influential family? And is the kicker, with all her assets going to the crown and not to him, or place her under house arrest? He chose the latter and decided to wall up Elizabeth in her castle with only a slit for food and air. She died 4 years later on the 24th of August 1614 and was buried in the Bathory family crypt at her home castle. Her cohorts were apparently tortured and burnt alive, but only admitted guilt after the torture. Now those in the innocent corner believe that Elizabeth was a political prisoner, a scapegoat for Thurzo and King Matthias, who respectively wanted the castle and lands, and to whom Elizabeth was owed a great sum of money due to the king's heavy borrowing. Due to the coffers being empty, King Matthias apparently couldn't pay up, so Thurzo allegedly simply got rid of Elizabeth the only way he knew how, without killing her outright. After all, he didn't want her assets being forfeited to the crown. And she was a woman ruling her vast estates and assets without a man by her side, an easy target as a scapegoat. Also, the recorded accounts seem to have appeared in 1729, more than 100 years after they allegedly happened, recorded by a Jesuit scholar by the name of Laszlo Tarozzi. Thurzo allegedly had been planning for quite some time in his new role as Palatine of Hungary to get rid of political rivals and wanted to control powerful families, and the Bathory family, and now its head Elizabeth, was perfect to conquer. Except Elizabeth was not going to go quietly. There is evidence that she asked to go on trial several times, all of which were denied. Elizabeth wrote letters protesting her innocence of the crimes, and Parliament passed a law when she was placed under house arrest, and thereby life imprisonment, that her name was not to be spoken of ever again in polite society. It was alleged there was a diary which had the names of 650 girls that met their end at the hands of Elizabeth and her cohorts, but this has never been found. Elizabeth was charged with the murders of between 30 and 80 girls, and regardless of guilt or innocence, has gone down in history as the most infamous mass murderer. Elizabeth even features in the Guinness World Records as the most prolific female murderer. Justified or not, it's a complete what the situation.
Yeah, it really is one of those questions about who gets to write the history.
Exactly. Like I said, now history is recorded by those who won the war.
Mm.
Or wars, or whatever. Yeah. Or who had the most money. So I think sometimes history can be a bit subjective.
Yeah, I mean, she's definitely a very...
As much as I love history, mm-hmm. I love it, love it, love it. That's why I'm doing this. But yeah, it can be a little bit biased.
Definitely a
so
very...
So who knows? Who knows? We can't go back unless Doctor Who comes with his time... his time machine. God damn it, Susie. TARDIS, everyone. I am a Whovian. I'm also very tired.
All good. So
we're responsible here.
From a bit of a mystery and a bit of a what is the truth to another subject where the person involved said, yep, that's true, by the end of it.
Well, there you go.
But still, there's questions about whether he was telling the truth. Again, without a time machine, we won't know.
Meow.
So, I shall move on, shall I? And
go for it.
I want to ask you guys a question. Have you ever stayed in a bad hotel?
Yes.
A grotty room, bad service, yes. Noisy, or just a weird smell?
Oh, God, can't we say names here?
No, we cannot say the name of that place. We will get in trouble.
We would never speak that place again.
Look, I've been there, lying back on a dodgy mattress, wondering if it could get any worse. Well, rest assured, it could be much, much worse.
Okay, serious face.
Herman Webster Mudgett was born in May of 1861 in Gilmerton, New Hampshire, in the USA. He was well off and by all accounts was a very intelligent child. Not surprisingly for the time, he developed an interest in medicine. There are some tales of things that happened during his childhood, however very little of it is consistent across accounts, so at this point we will leave the rest of his developing years as a mystery. He did enroll in the Department of Medicine and Surgery at the University of Michigan in 1882, and he graduated 2 years later. During his time at the university, he came up with a little scheme to make some money on the side. Herman would make a deal with an accomplice to take out a life insurance policy with him as a benefactor. He would then steal a cadaver from the school that was of similar height and weight to his partner in crime. The accomplice would then leave town while Herman proceeded to mutilate the cadaver beyond recognition before presenting it to authorities, claiming it was the body of the now absent criminal partner, and then reaped the benefits of the insurance policy.
Yep.
Now, I think this would only work so many times, so unsurprisingly, in 1886, he changed his name, moved to Chicago, and commenced working at a pharmacy. What was his new name, you ask? Dr. Henry Howard Holmes, the name he will become infamous for in later years. In the lead-up to the 1893 World's Fair in Chicago, Holmes, I'll stick with his name from now on, purchased a block of land across from the pharmacy and built a three-story house, stating it would be used for apartments with shops on the ground floor. During construction, he regularly changed builders so no one could report on what was being built.
That's just sounding sus.
Opening in 1892, just in time for the World's Fair,
mm-hmm.
Holmes's hotel was a confusing labyrinth. There were stairwells that ended at walls, strange shaped and sized rooms, and that doesn't even touch on what was going on behind the steel-lined soundproof walls.
Ew.
Holmes had constructed, for all intents and purposes, a murder house. Reportedly a charming man, Holmes lured many visitors from the World's Fair by offering cheap lodgings. Others were offered employment. A number of women were seduced by Holmes and would move in with him. Many were not seen again, and I'm putting in my disclaimer.
Yeah.
I'm not going to drill down into all the details. This is just an overview, and I still think this needs a big disclaimer. So check those timestamps and jump ahead if you don't want to hear this. Okay? Mm-hmm. Good.
Please.
So what happened at the hotel? There were rooms where he had installed gas jets. Once inside, a guest would be trapped as Holmes flooded the room with gas and asphyxiated his victims. Other unfortunates would find themselves in metal-lined rooms where blowtorches would ignite. Through a system of secret passages and trapdoors, unfortunates could simply be trapped, slowly starving to death or being taken to one of the small rooms behind the walls where Holmes could torture and kill them at his leisure. Finally, his victims would be dropped in chutes that went down to the basement where Holmes had installed furnaces, vats of acid, and pits filled with quicklime capable of decomposing a body within hours. Through his medical and criminal connections, he would sell skeletons and organs to doctors and universities. Due to his efficiency, it is still not known how many died in what became known as the Holmes Murder Castle over the 2 years it was in operation.
Oh, gross.
He left Chicago in 1894, but not because his gruesome racket had been discovered. He was still running his insurance fraud racket, except now he allegedly would often dispose of those who found themselves in partnership with him. And ultimately, it was one of the criminal partners that led to Holmes's undoing. Marion Hedgepath, who was also aware of Holmes's real name, tipped off authorities after he failed to provide the promised cut of their scheme. Holmes was arrested for insurance fraud, but further investigation led to the suspicion that his crimes went much deeper. Police investigated his hotel, discovering the basement with its still bloody operating tables, piles of bones, and even a lady's gold chain in one of the furnaces. Newspapers went wild, showing floor plans of the building and reporting on all the grisly details. Holmes himself stepped up and admitted to killing at least 27 people. However, his accounts varied, and various researchers have his potential victims between 100 or 200, while others say they can only verify 9 for sure. While in prison, awaiting his inevitable execution, Holmes penned an autobiography in which he wrote, quote, "I was born with a devil in me. I could not help the fact that I was a murderer, no more than the poet can help the inspiration to sing." End quote.
Oh.
His final request was to be buried in a grave 10 feet deep and covered in concrete, so that no one could reclaim his body for autopsy or research purposes. This has led to further speculation that someone else was hanged and he escaped. Either way, after the execution was carried out in 1896, Holmes was never heard from again. So what happened to the hotel? It burned down in 1895, with one witness alleging he saw two figures fleeing the scene. The ruins remained until 1938, when it was finally demolished to make way for a post office. Now, I would suggest that the next time you are having trouble sleeping in a not-so-good hotel room, that you take a moment to consider how much worse it could be. But I think if you turned your mind to H.H. Holmes's Murder Castle, it might make getting to sleep even more difficult.
Oh, what a disgusting excuse for a person.
I don't classify this man as human, personally.
No.
And
No, that's... Oh, that's all.
Yes!
Not as bad as last year's.
No, I...
So thanks for that.
There were more...
Oh, gosh, yes. This is how Halloween... This is how we roll at Halloween.
We're great. Macabre and gruesome.
And we also get requests as well.
That's true. And so thank you for listening to What the Halloween.
You, all the spooky, weird stuff that happens. Woo. Yes.
And we hope you enjoyed that. and hopefully it was less dramatic than last time. And I'm not going to talk about that anymore. If you want to know more about what we've talked about, we do have references down below.
I have stacks of references to Elizabeth Bathory, so please read them. Make up your own mind. Guilty, innocent, don't know, circumstantial evidence. Oh.
Yeah.
You know, the detective in me really wants to work this out. But, you know, like I said, if we don't have a TARDIS, we can't go back and make and have a look for sure.
Very true. Very, very true. Yeah. My references are nice and straightforward. Everyone agrees that Holmes was...
Yeah, even Holmes said that.
I can't say the word I was about to say. Because,
Even he said it. Yeah, I did.
I'm not going to say that word on the podcast, even though I came very, very close. Anyway.
I'm not even ask what that word is. I'm not even going to go there.
All good. So, if you would like to get in touch with us, you can do that very, very easily. Let's move on nice and quick.
Or stop me at parties like other people do.
That's also an option. So you can head to our homepage at wthpod.rufusproject.com and you can leave comments below this very episode. You can find us on Facebook. Just search for the What the History podcast Facebook page.
Uh-huh.
Or we're on Twitter at pod_what or use the hashtag WTHpod.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, indeed. You could even send us an email if you're so inclined.
Oh, that's a bit old school.
Oh, yes. Rocking it old school
style. Keeping it real. Keeping it real.
And
ladies and gents.
That email.
Those in between.
That email is wthpod@rufusproject.com. And we will be back in a couple of weeks' time with a normal episode. I think we've had two special episodes in a way.
A normal episode.
As normal as we get.
Yeah, because we had our birthday.
We did.
Last time.
We did. That was a double-length episode. So, yes, we will be back on our regularly scheduled programming. And we will definitely be back with two more bits of bizarre history to make you say,
What the history?
See you then.
Good night. Something strange. Come with us and you will see. This our town of Halloween. This is Halloween. This is Halloween. Pumpkin scream and a dead of night. This is Halloween. Everybody make a scene. Trick or treat. Tell the neighbors on a dime. It's our town. Everybody's free. In this town of Halloween. I am the one hiding under your bed.